Everyone's asleep.
As a talk radio show parasite, the inimitable, the pugtastic, the employophobic, the most obtrusive impartial observer since Operation Mockingbird, the broke-ass activist with a scent of entitlement, broadcasting from an abandoned Masonic lodge at the fluoridated Agenda 21 corporate dictatorship pseudo-death camp of Auckland, New Zealand. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio for your listening pleasure and discomfort simultaneously, because if it's not cosmic and ironic, then it probably isn't true, and if it ain't true, we don't air it on American Freedom Radio, bro. There's no taboo topics. Today, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a very special guest, the Awakener of Minds, the reptilian Pimpernel. It's David Icke, all the way from England. David, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Vinny.
I do love seeing you in the flesh, as it were, and I'm sure my radio listeners will agree, those of them who watch it on YouTube, to actually do a bit of video here and there just to make it a bit more interesting. However, I wonder, do we, in this day and age, have the technology to make stuff look totally legit? Because I understand that you did this with the People's Voice. You attempted to create an organization that would make real high quality, like studio news and all that fab thing. But what actually happened there, and why is there no People's Voice today?
Well, it ran out of money, basically. I was someone who put together the programming, and others ran this station, and it basically ran out of money. But some good things were done there, and all you can do is do your best. And then when something doesn't work, you do your best doing something else. I mean, all we've got to do is keep on keeping on, and other things come along.
Now, the things that you're doing are the tour going on, and your worldwide tour. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I've been feeling for quite a long time, actually, that the period 2016, 2017, 2018 are absolutely crucial in where this world goes, both with people awakening to what they've not seen before, and also in the speed of imposition of the conspiracy, the control system, and they're going side by side. And I've also been seeing very clearly that there is an increasingly vast number of people who haven't got to the point where they're saying, oh, there's a conspiracy going on or anything like that. But they have got to the point where they're uneasy with the world. They don't like what's happening, and they've got this feeling of something's not right. They can't articulate it, but something's not right. And so what I'm setting out to do is to talk in as many places as I can. It's an open-ended tour, really. I mean, there's loads this year, including Auckland on the 6th of August. And then next year I'm carrying on to just do everything I can to connect dots, because I've spent 26 years doing it now, to put things into context. And I think this is a vital area in all this, context. You can see 9/11, for instance, in and of itself, and it looks a certain way. You can look at the banking crash of 2008 in and of itself, and it looks a certain way. And it's the same with all of these things. You can look at Syria and what's happening there in and of itself, and you see it in a certain way. But when you put these events into context and you connect them as they can be, then they look very, very different. And if you, whatever you're looking at, if you don't see the context in which what you're looking at is happening, you can never understand what you're looking at, because you've only got a fraction of the picture. So these talks, which are from 10 in the morning till 10 at night, over four sections, are all about taking a vast number of different, apparently unconnected topics and putting them into context so that people can see why these events are happening. Even though they don't seem to be connected, because they are connected, and they're connected in this way. Two things we need to know to get an understanding of world events. One, where are we being taken? And two, what are the methods being used to take us there? And once you realize where we're being taken and how we're being taken there, you can take events of all different kinds and you can put them into that structure. So where we're being taken is towards what I call the Hunger Games society, where you've got a less than 1% at the top of the pyramid. You have not just people who are in poverty, deprivation and austerity today, but basically the rest of the population is in a form of servitude and financial insecurity. And between those two groups is designed to be a merciless police state to hold that status quo and keep the masses in line in accordance with the wishes of the less than 1%. And if you look at that structure now, it's unfolding so fast. And, you know, there's so many people who at the moment will see themselves as financially okay and secure, who don't think that this is their problem. Although I'm seeing more and more of that kind of person start to look a bit closer, because they think they're okay. But if you're not part of this less than 1%, they want your wealth as well. They want your security as well. And one of the big steps towards that has been this move in Europe and wider afield from the bank bailout to the bank bail-in. We have had a situation where the crash of 2008 led to a vast transfer of wealth from people in government debt, i.e. people debt, to these this less than 1%. And as a result of that, government said, well, we haven't got any money now, so we're going to have austerity programs. So that 2008 crash had two massive effects in terms of building the Hunger Games society. There was the fantastic transfer of finance to the less than 1%, and then the justification of the austerity on the people. You've seen it all over the place. Perhaps the most extreme example is Greece, which is being not only devastated in terms of its people, it's being looted in terms of its resources and its whatever state ownership it has.
That's what happens. They get it into a state of crisis, and then they get somebody in from the banking clan. I think it was somebody named Papademos. It's like, who could save us from this terrible banking infection? Well, a guy who sounds like a venereal disease. That sounds like a real great idea. What happened in New Zealand as well? In 2008, we elected a guy called John Key, who in the early 2000s and late 90s, during the repeal of Glass-Steagall, was on the board of the Federal Reserve Bank of New York in charge of the European bond and derivative trade. So New Zealand's great idea to save us from the 2008 financial crash is to hire the guy who helped cause it to lead
well,
us.
Well, I mean, that classically, that's what Obama did with the people that he put into power as the people to respond to that 2008 crash. They were also the people that caused it. But even so, and this is where a lot of people still don't get where this is going. Even despite all that, there's still a large number of people who think they're okay, who are doing well financially and are secure. The bail-in, which kicked in with the banking problems in Cyprus a few years ago, is to go from governments bailing out the banks when a bank crashes to going directly to the bank accounts of people in that bank, which means now they have access to people's accounts who are well off, and they can go and just take it. This is the new response to banking problems, the bail-in. And there was a lot of very wealthy people, not least a Russian, who had a lot of money in those Cyprus banks who haven't got it now, because they simply went and took it. And this is one of the main ways that's planned to part people who now think it's not their problem from their wealth and from their security. And this is why we must realize, whatever race, background, or income bracket we are, if you're not in that less than 1%, then you're in the target. And thus, we need to come together and see it's all our problems, and not
there's
just
one,
ones.
There's
in
one
the
realization.
Street, a homeless in the street.
There's one realization on top of that as well, because if you're not currently in the 0.0001%, you're not ever going to be in there. You're born into it, or you never get in. It's just that simple. There is no hope for you. There is no negotiating. There is no, I'll just do what they want and maybe they'll keep me as a pet or something. No, you will be a slave, okay? Just like everybody else, if you're not already born into the elite.
Yes, and people think that people accrue that kind of wealth by accident, but it's not by accident. It's not even by good judgment. It's by pure cold calculation. And what's been happening ever since this global network created today's money system is that this less than 1% has been exchanging money created out of nothing called credit for resources and wealth that does exist. And in this way, they have taken over control of, according to the latest figures I saw, close to half the world's wealth now is in the hands of the 1%. And as you mentioned, the real people with the real wealth are a fraction of that 1%. And so we have a situation where this exchange of fresh air created out of nothing money called credit for resources and land and assets has transferred half the world's wealth to a tiny fraction of the people. And as I keep saying to people, if you don't like it now, well, strap in. because this is where we are now. It's not where we're meant to end up. And so they've reached the point where half the world's wealth is in the hands of the, well, less than 1% in truth. That now they want to mop up the other half. And of course, it's a simple equation. The more power you accrue at the center, the more power you have to accrue more power at the center quicker, because you control the system even more powerfully.
So
this is getting faster and faster and faster, this process. Mm. It's not going to take as long to mop up the other half as it's taken to get this far.
Mm.
And people who think it's not their problem, they need to look in the mirror or look around at world events and realize that their problem is coming towards them at a very fast speed, and we need to address it. Otherwise, it's going to happen.
Yeah. We were interviewing William Black, and he said that people don't realize how much damage financial crime actually does to them in their daily life, how much it does to their grocery prices, how much it does to their utility bills, how big a problem corruption actually is. If there wasn't any corruption, you'd probably have between 30 to 60% more expendable income than you do now. That's how much they're stealing of the available wealth that's created in society. During the 2008 financial crisis, an estimated 48% of the world's wealth disappeared. Not stolen, disappeared. And what remained, a bulk of it got siphoned off into these elites, right? So they, again, as you say, they're not doing it by accident. This is a very, very well planned out game, and it's been done with a lot of patience. And I think that going up against them, this is the one thing that I'm getting really frustrated with people with, David. They're going up against a very, very patient, very cold, calculating enemy without being patient, without being in it for the long haul, thinking there's going to be some silver bullet or whatever, that they don't have to commit their entire lives to it, that kind of thing. That's not the kind of commitment that's going to really make a change, I think.
Well, this is my 26th year, and I've seen so many people come and I've seen so many people go. I've seen them flavor of the month for a little while and then suddenly disappearing. And, you know, from my own experience, once you realize what's happening and you get some grasp of it, and you have grandchildren, you have children, other people have grandchildren and children. And if people think it's bad now, what it's going to be like for them unless we head this off, there is absolutely no other thing that you can do with your life except focus upon this. You know, I don't understand how people can get some grasp on what's happening and then walk away because the kitchen's too hot, or, you know, someone called me names. You know, we need some bloody backbone here and perseverance, because, you know, I remember when I started out in 1990, it was a very lonely place. There weren't too many people talking about this, and there were very, very few people that wanted to know. But because of persistence and patience, you say, you've got to just keep going, whatever. You know, oh, it's difficult. Well, you know, it was never going to be easy. Just get on with it. Now, for me anyway, it's dreamland because of the vastness of the numbers that are now looking at this, and also this even vaster number who are in this transitional point of, I don't like what's going on. What's going on? Something's not right. Something's not right here. And that open-mindedness to, so what is not right is a massive opportunity to get more people to look at actually what is not right and why it's not right. And if the information was not true, if it was not, didn't have validity, well, there'd be no point at all. But once people look at it dispassionately and put the program down for a minute, they see that it makes sense of a world that the official stories of the world do not make sense of. But, you know, for me, the thing that is holding people in servitude and without deleting it will continue to do so, is what I call the program. It's a perception program, and it starts from the moment you leave the womb, probably before, and it goes through your parents, it goes through the education system, it goes out mainstream media, involves peer pressure who've taken on the program and confirming the program is right to other people, and if they don't accept it, ridicule and condemnation and marginalization if they don't accept the program. And if you look at what happens, you come out of the womb and you're influenced by your parents. Your parents have got their perception program from what you're about to go through. Immediately then, very, very quickly after we arrive in this world, I mean, you know, hello, you're sitting at a desk with an authority figure representing the state, telling you when you have to be there, when you can leave, when you can eat, when you can talk, what's right, what's wrong, what is, what isn't. And then you go into higher education, start to pay for your own programming then in massive amounts of debt. And then you go out into the world and you become a scientist or a doctor or a journalist or a politician. And you're taking with you that base program, that perception program of the world, yourself, the nature of reality and world events. And now you are involved in the institutions that are directing society. And if you don't conform to the programmed norms, and that's what it is, the programmed version of normal, then you're not going to progress in science. You're not going to progress in medicine. You're not going to progress in politics, journalism, any of them. So you've got this download of the perception of normal. And that is what repels all borders in terms of looking at what's really happening as opposed to what the program is telling you is happening. So Einstein said that condemnation without investigation is the height of ignorance. But because of this program, that's what people do all the time. When they hear something that's a bit, from their point of view, outlandish, they don't go and check the information. Well, what is there to back this up? They just dismiss it with a wave of the concrete mind. And so this open-mindedness, this realization that just because you believe it, just because you've been told it, doesn't mean it's true, is essential to open and break these programs so other levels of awareness can get in and enter the perception process. And that's what awakening is. People talk about waking up all the time. What is it waking up from, and what is it waking up to? Well, it's waking up from this bloody program, this perception program. And what are people waking up to? They're waking up to a more expanded view of the world, where information is the guide rather than just acting upon what we're told. I was on a BBC program the other day, and some former Margaret Thatcher minister said about conspiracies. He said they are intellectually lazy. Well, there is absolutely nothing more intellectually lazy than accepting the official version without question. How much more intellectually lazy can you get? What people who are questioning the system are doing is doing the opposite of being intellectually lazy. They're saying, hold on a minute, does this add up? Are they telling the truth? And as we know, invariably, they're not. I mean, here in England at the moment, we've got a referendum coming up and a referendum campaign going on about whether we stay in the European Union. And it consists of the Prime Minister and the Chancellor of the Exchequer lying every morning more than they did lie the day before. I mean, Godzilla is going to come and eat everybody if we don't stay in the European Union. I'm waiting for that one. I mean, that's how ridiculous it's got, using fear to get people to do what they want.
Which reminds me. I've decided to come up with a new fear-based donation funding scheme for the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ladies and gentlemen, donate to the Vinnie Eastwood Show or the Rothschilds will get you. David, continue, please.
Yeah, so that's where we are. We're in a situation where, You know, it's like people say things, but then ignore the fact that they've said them. They say politicians lie. Well, they do. It's in their DNA, most of them, especially the ones that get into any power. But then people still go with what politicians say. So a large number of people in Britain are going to vote to stay in the European Union, this bureaucratic centralized tyranny, because they've allowed themselves to be frightened into what will happen if we don't by these politicians who are lying through their teeth every day. People say, oh, you never believe what you read in the papers, but then they believe what they read in the papers. And of course, what is happening whenever there's a referendum to come out of the EU or whatever, is the bulk of the mainstream media is supporting what the establishment wants, which is to stay in. And if you look at how people form their perceptions, they form them from information. And so what they've done is hijacked this, what I call mainstream everything, in terms of information. And others, anything else is marginalized. The internet has been a fantastic antidote to that up to this point. And the internet has is actually at the center of this control system that they want. But to bring it in, they had to give some good things with it. What they're doing now, obviously, and this is again connected to the EU and these trade agreements being negotiated in secret, like TTIP and the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The idea is to delete all the good things about the internet, like the free flow of information and opinion, and leave only what is good from their point of view.
A sanitized version.
Say again?
A sanitized version.
A sanitized version, yes. I mean, one of the things that is happening is these internet giants like Facebook and Google are manipulating algorithms and search engine lists and in many other different ways to marginalize alternative information. And the British government has just announced that it's going to increase the defense against terrorism by bringing in laws in this next stage of parliament that will make it an offense to have extremist views on the internet. So this question is, who decides what extreme views are? And like all this so-called anti-terrorist legislation, which is sold as protecting people from terrorism, it's written in a way that it can apply to everybody. I mean, over here, we've got people protesting who are being subject to laws that were passed years ago on an anti-terrorism, promotion. And they're saying, well, why is it they're using anti-terrorist laws against us? The answer is very simple. That's what they were there for, not to do with terrorism. So, the whole attacks and censorship of the internet is something that is unfolding, because obviously, if you are involved in a perception deception, then you must not only control information that people receive from you to download the perception programs, you've got to stop alternatives to what you're claiming is going on being circulated, so people can say, actually, there's another way of looking at this. So there's a two-pronged thing going on, control of information in the mainstream, but also deleting information that challenges that coming out of the alternative. And, we're seeing more evidence of it.
Dr. Bob Melamede calls this the challenge between the blips and the flips, the forward-looking people and the backward-looking people.
Yeah, well, the reason that people like me, you, all of us put this information out and do everything we can to do it is because there's only one way of challenging a perception deception based on control of information that people receive. And that's by putting information that challenges that before people. And because it has, it makes such sense of an otherwise unexplainable world. I mean, why are we bombing this country? What just happened? Why is that happening? Why is that happening? It makes no sense. What are they doing? And people say, oh, it's the politicians. They're just the idiots. Well, a lot of them are. But behind the idiots is this network that's always there. This politician comes in, this politician comes in, that one goes out, that one goes out. But that hidden hand is always there. And at that point, yes, they're sick. And yes, they're deeply disturbed. But intellectually, they're not stupid in terms of their understanding of how to play humanity like a violin. And in many ways, you know, blaming politicians is a defense mechanism to that hidden hand, because people are looking over here and over there, that politician, it's him. They don't see the hidden hand. And when you do, you see how it works. You see the world it's seeking to create and the methods it uses. Suddenly a world of random happenings and unexplained happenings, and why did they do that, and why did they do that makes perfect sense. That's the challenge we have, getting that information out there.
There's a number of layers to the wake-up process. I found, like, the most important one is going through the grief process. You know, you deny that there's a new world order, you get depressed that there's a new world order, you get angry that there's a new world order, you accept that there's a new world order, and then you start fighting the new world order, right? But in order to get to that point, you have to have a number of people and a number of influences or a very traumatic event come into your life in order to knock you off that little pedestal of, this is society, it's lovely, everything is true, the drugs have no side effects, the police tell the truth, the politicians aren't working for ruthless reptilian overlords, you know, that kind of thing. And so you go into this process where you start to look down on others initially, as in, you're stupid, you're an idiot, you're a sheep or whatever, and then you think, is that the enlightened thing to do? Or is the enlightened thing to do to have patience, to understand that it'll take these people time, influences, and traumas of their own for them to wake up to the control system that's going on around me? And all I have to do is keep telling the truth. Like oil in water, it doesn't matter how much water there is, a tiny little bit of oil can contaminate so much of it. Every time you tell the truth, it'll contaminate 1,000 lies of theirs and put a little crack in the glass that holds it together. And because it takes people time to think for these things to whirl in, the New World Order's figured that one out as well. That's why the bulk of the entertainment industry is controlled by only a few corporations, which are in turn controlled by even fewer people. You know.
Yeah, and of course, the entertainment industry is there to divert attention. It's like a magic trick with a conjurer. If he's doing something over here to do the trick, he wants you looking here. So that's what the entertainment industry is for. It's to focus attention on total crap so you miss. And the thing that they want to destroy by focusing attention is peripheral vision. Peripheral vision, that's where you see what's going on. That's where the dots connect. They want people connected on particular dots, so they're seeing pixels and not pictures. But what you just said, I don't like the term sheeple and such.
Me neither, yeah.
Terms, because you know, some people when they wake up to it or start to wake up to it, they get embarrassed. How could I have been so stupid to have fallen for it? And others won't, especially people who've, you know, are later in years, who've gone through their lives believing it. They're resistant to seeing that it was all a hoax, because they think, well, what was my life about then? You know, I've been hoaxed all my life. I'm not going to face that. I'm going to deny it. I'm going to attack the messenger or ignore it. But if we look at it, No one should be embarrassed about being hoaxed by this. I mean, look at the sequence I've just, you know, mentioned a few minutes ago. You come out the womb and bang, it hits you. And from that moment, the download programming of perception is incessant everywhere you go. It's that line about, you know, if teachers and parents and all these different people tell you 2 and 2 equals 5, eventually you're going to accept 2 and 2 equals 5 because that's what everyone seems to be saying. It becomes that everyone knows that, mate. And so when you realize 2 and 2 equals 4, it's like not to be embarrassed. It's to be joyous about, because despite the scale of the programming, despite how incessant it is, how from all angles it's coming, you've actually broken through it. It's a round of applause. It's not something to be embarrassed about. And you know, it's a gift then. That's another point. Once you've started to suss it and the program starts to crack, now that's, in this world, that is a fantastic gift. And with that gift comes responsibility, I would suggest. And that's a responsibility to do everything you can to start communicating what you're understanding with other people. Even if you get, you know, dismissal and ridicule, so what? I mean, like I say, no one said it's going to be easy, because knowledge is not power. It's not. This is a myth. The use of knowledge is power. If you have knowledge and that stays with you and is not in any way used or communicated, then you just become a cul-de-sac for that knowledge. It's not going anywhere. It's stopped moving. So those that are aware of some levels of what is going on, there is a responsibility that comes with that gift, which is to communicate it to other people in every way you can. Not to tell them they must believe you, mm-hmm. not to tell them they're sheeple and stupid, but to say, here's another way of looking at these events and looking at life itself, reality, who we are, where we are, and all that. Yeah. And that flow of information will start to get people. I mean, it's happened.
I call it the
People to look at life differently. A lot of people look at life differently because it probably be the first time they've ever heard anything like that because of the mainstream program.
Yeah, it's the seventh man. Statistically speaking, if you approach somebody with a belief structure that's completely alien to their own, first person to say it to them, they'll tell them to fuck off. Second person too, and the third person, all the way up to the seventh person, and then they say, you know, maybe I'll start thinking about it or whatever. That's how many times it takes. And it's not you, one person, repeatedly telling them it. That's why people get really annoyed with cultists and things, Bray. Okay, are you a truth cultist? No, you're not. You're an enlightened individual who's trying to help the other people who just haven't actually had the time to come to the conclusions themselves yet. So the correct approach is to not have an emotional attachment to them waking up. Pull the information grenade, say one thing, pull the pin, chuck it in, and it may blow up in their face later, but just leave it until they bring it up. That way you don't alienate your family and yourself from society and get yourself really depressed and angry and into a tiny little clique of your own, where you don't really listen to anybody else and you become an echo chamber for your own hatred of the human race, and you start calling everybody idiots and sheeple because they won't listen to you because you won't change your approach.
But I two things to that. First of all, I've been saying since I started this that people say, what are you doing? I'm putting information out. And as I said from the start, so people can make of it what they will. I'm completely relaxed by what they make of it, because it's none of my business. You know, this is the point. It's no good talking about freedom and people being free to come to their own conclusions, and then telling people how wrong and stupid they are if they don't come to the conclusions you think they should come to. I mean, look at that in reverse. That's what people say, the mainstream says about people like me. Because I've not come to the conclusions that they think I should come to, then I'm mad or crazy or dangerous or whatever. So we're not going to move forward if we just become a reverse of that in the way that we operate. And another point in this is, I have this phrase I've used for a long time: you can't unhear something. When you put information out that's different to the norm, that relates to where this is going, then people may dismiss you and they may call you names, but they can't unhear it. And this is something that I've really noticed in the last few years. Stuff that was in my books years ago and was dismissed is now being read on the television news in terms of changes in world events. And this is getting a lot of people to go, hold on a second, didn't that bloke say that? Now, if I hadn't have said it when I was getting all that ridicule and abuse, and I came along now and said, look, I knew this was going to happen because this is the plan. They say, oh, yeah, anyone can say that, but it's in the books. And even if you you get a bad reaction and what you say falls on, stony ground, that's only then. It's not necessarily, you are literally planting seeds because people can't unhear something. So nothing's ever lost. But one thing's for sure, if you don't put it out there to start with, its validity can't be seen through world events later on because you've not put it out there. But we really do need to get away from or beyond this point where we are standing there saying, oh, I know what's going to happen next. Yeah, they're going to do that now. You watch, this is what they'll do. And instead of that, cross the bloody street and engage with it. Engage with communicating this information. It's not a hobby, right? It's not train spotting. It's making a difference to the way this where this world is going. And when you think that this is the ultimate subject in the sense that every single man, woman, and child in any human society is affected and will be more so by what is going on. So it's a subject that involves us all, and we all need to take responsibility to challenge the program by communicating information when we get it, not just keeping it to ourselves.
I'd also say it's about being open to receive it, because it's like you get into this place where you think, oh, I'm so open to receive this or whatever, and then something else comes along and you start, I get this ping and I start behaving the very same way that I criticize like bad psychopathic scumbags and people who aren't totally awakened of acting, and then I just go, whoa, hold on a second, I'm doing that as well. I think once you lose that self-analysis, that belief that I too can be fooled, I too can be an idiot, I too can't learn anything new, I too have sussed out the truth, all of it, right now.
But yeah, I mean that's a very important point, and you know I do see this in tracks of the alternative media. I live my life and do my work on the basis of a common theme of philosophers through the ages, people like Socrates, Confucius, etc., which can be summed up by wisdom is knowing how little we know. Whatever we know, we do know one thing. There's always more to know. When you think of the ludicrous tiny band of frequency, visible light, that we can actually see, and everything else outside of that, which is basically the entirety of everything else virtually, we can't see. Some humility is required in terms of believing we've sussed it. I've said before, I don't believe anything in the sense of it's solidifying into an immovable object. I have a way that I see things at any point. And I know as I look at the things at that point that there's more to know. And if it's not moved on in terms of detail and expanded understanding, 6 months hence, well, what the heck have you been doing? Because there's so much to know And therefore, if we're not continually moving towards that and are open to it, then we're going to become another cul-de-sac going round and round and round. And you know, the alternative media is often seen as like something in and of itself. You've got the mainstream media, you've got the alternative media. The alternative media is a vast spectrum of perception, which goes from almost imperceptibly different from the mainstream, right across to people who question everything about everything to see if it stands up, and explore things that this end of the alternative media would ridicule and dismiss just as much as the mainstream media would. That's why, you know, I've had as much abuse from the alternative media over the years as I have from the mainstream. And if we are wanting to understand and go deeper and deeper in the rabbit hole, not just to see how deep it goes, but to see those levels where you can change things because you find out where it's coming from, then the alternative media also needs to open its mind and go beyond its current belief system, because so much of it stays only in the five sense world of names, dates, places, etc. And I do all that. I've been doing all that all these years. Fine. But if you only do that, then you are just looking at the world of the program from a slightly different angle. And the program still has you, because the program is an expression of something deeper. You know, it's like the five sense world is like a movie on a screen. It's no good looking for the movie in the screen. It ain't there. You've got to go and find the projector or whatever is wherever the source of the movie is to change the movie. And if you're only perceiving the movie level of what's going on, the five sense level, then it's like standing on a stage in a movie theater, hurling abuse at the screen, demanding that it changes, and it ain't gonna change because it's just a projection. You've got to find out where it's coming from.
People have that great difficulty to sort of like reprioritize how do I get my thoughts in order. And during your work time, that's your survival time, I think. So what they do is they pay you a certain amount in order for you to justify robbing yourself of your own destiny. And during your free time, you justify robbing yourself of your own destiny and your own ability to think by absorbing entertainment and packages that they've prepared for you, which perpetuate a negative energy spectrum and not a whole lot of incredibly revelationary thoughts. If you're listening to a talk radio show host in this alternative media, ladies and gentlemen, you don't have like an aha moment, like you learn something, not only that you didn't know, but you didn't know that you didn't know it, right? It was so totally outside of your perception that it blows your mind a little bit. If that doesn't happen when you're listening to a radio show host that you're listening to on an episodely basis, each episode you need to have one of those moments, that radio host themselves isn't waking up any further from when they first started. Okay, they're actually operating at the same level. Their view of the world hasn't really changed that much. And you can know, because when they're interviewing somebody, you don't change either.
Well, you know, this thing about consciousness and perception is absolutely crucial. And when you look at the history of human behavior, the period around 6,000 years ago, about 4,000 BC, it just blows your mind. And this is you know, mainstream research has concluded this too, though not pursued very deeply why. There was a fundamental shift in human behavior. Before 6,000 years ago, there was basically no war. Possessions were not something that people sought. It was peaceful compared with now. It's stunningly so. And then from about 6,000 years ago, war started. instead of cities, towns being built anywhere, they started with no fortifications because there was no need. Now suddenly they were being built with fortifications. They were being built in inaccessible places as protection. The male-dominated society kicked in after 6,000 years ago. Inequality kicked in. Before 6,000 years ago, people were basically buried in graves and often communal graves together. And then suddenly, after this change in perception stroke behavior, you started getting the pauper's graves and the massive graves for certain people, the accumulation of wealth, the use of war to control and impose. And it was just a massive shift in consciousness. And it was something that took people from the earlier understanding, which can still be seen in a lot of Aboriginal people and Native peoples today, from understanding that everything is connected to everything else, that we are part of a greater awareness, what some call the Great Spirit, and we're all expressions of that life force, to people being pulled into the five senses and that being the arbiter of everything. And when you get pulled into the five senses and that becomes your focus of attention, what immediately happens is you lose connection with other people. You lose this key to, I call it the fail-safe mechanism of everything, and that's empathy. And what clearly started to be deleted after around 6,000 years ago was empathy. So that suddenly people could do horrific things to people that they weren't doing before and have no emotional consequence for it. And we started then to introduce what is known today as technology. Suddenly we had the Bronze Age, the Iron Age, we had metal weapons. And then that's moved on because of this different mindset. And it's become this completely controlled virtually by technology world that we have today. And when people talk about, oh, it's human nature, well, that wasn't the nature of humans before about 6,000 years ago. Yeah. And although it was starting to move slowly, the big kick in was very fast. So what we're looking at is, and also this new psyche, as some people call it, that came in after about 6,000 years ago, that led to the intellectual controlled mind that we have that we see today. People worship the intellect, but the intellect is the village idiot compared with consciousness beyond the intellect. But the intellect dominates science, it dominates journalism, it dominates politics, it dominates medicine. I mean, look at it. And so something happened to change that. Something happened to put humanity or the humanity that took the world over anyway, in that state of intellectual obsession, and thus particularly in the left side of the brain, where everything looks apart from everything else. This world is all that exists. And you can see when you look at the way Aboriginal people, for instance, in Australia and other countries, still perceive the world, that it's very different to this intellect-dominated perception, which dominates the rest of the world, and actually has created this society that we live in today. And for me, what that intellect is, it's like blinkers or looking at the world through the wrong end of a telescope. All you can see is within this intellect's perception of possibility. And waking up is expanding beyond that. And suddenly the world looks very different. And that looks more and more ridiculous.
Indeed. Now, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the first hour here. And ladies and gentlemen, if you appreciate this this interview and the other interviews that we do over here at American Freedom Radio and the Vinnie Eastwood Show, if you think that interviewing people, maybe with views that you might disagree with, getting those different perspectives and involving the other perspective of human nature that a lot of people forget, is that there's a lot of potential, invention, love, empathy, creativity, self-sacrifice, and the ability for guardianship over others. DavidIcke.com is his website. Go and check that out, and also donate at TheVinnieEastwoodShow.com. We'll see you after the break, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to the world's meeting place. American.
It's practically narcotic.
Freedom.
Oh, yes. I like very much.
Radio.
You're an American institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
American Freedom Radio is back. We're trying to become commercial free, apart from a few honourable advertisers that we would give ad space to even if they couldn't pay us. In this quest to deliver quality radio with very few annoying ads, we are now asking the listeners like you to open up and become partners with American Freedom Radio. We all know the economy is controlled, and a new system called the peer-to-peer economy is now within our grasp. That means if you'd like this network with its incredible hosts and credible information to be nothing but the content you want to hear, then you must realize that you cannot be a part of it if you're just sitting on the sidelines watching. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and pledge your support today. Donate according to your means. Some can only afford $1 a month, while others can afford $100 a month. Regardless of the size of your contribution, it all adds up to keeping the network owners and the radio hosts housed and fed at the end of every month. Thank you.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Nobody questions things. Every one of those items is provably untrue at one level or another, but we believe them because they're pounded into our heads from the time we're children. That's what they do with that kind of stuff. They put it in the heads of kids. They pound it in there because kids, they know kids are too young to be able to mount a sophisticated argument against these kind of ideas. And so kids, and up to a certain age, by the way, kids are going to believe everything a grown-up tells them, everything. So kids never learn to question things. Nobody questions things in this country anymore. Why? People are too fat and happy. People are way too prosperous for their own good. Everyone's got a cell phone that'll make pancakes now, you know? So, nobody wants to rock the boat. And people just, gizmo, Americans have been silenced, bought off and silenced by gizmos and toys. And as a result, no one's ever learned to question things. No one questions things in this country anymore. No one questions things.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches.
The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFI wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.
Unlimited, an offer you can't refuse. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of chaos and madness, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio, a couple nights a week for the listening discomfort of those of you who don't like uncomfortable things like the truth. You know, if you're really not comfortable with it, if you just don't like it, please stop listening to this show and please stop leaving YouTube comments and please stop contacting me on Facebook and things like that. If you're uninterested in finding out whether or not the base assumptions upon which you are living your life are correct or not, and are willing to question those for the time period of your life, don't listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. If, however, you are sick of being treated like a child, you're sick of people doing your thinking for you, you're sick of having people cut down to a 30-second soundbite that doesn't mean anything anymore, then do listen to this show and do donate. Go to thevinnieeastwoodshow.com and AmericanFreedomRadio.com respectively and give us a couple of dollars a month just to make sure that we can just keep this broadcast going. Do we give you anything for your donation? No, we don't. Do we ask anybody to pay for any part of the services that we provide and all the audio and all the video services? Everything? No? No, we don't. Okay? It's a symbiotic relationship. Without a population that is informed and without information getting to them, they can't make informed decisions. It's just that simple. And you cannot pay people to spread the truth for you. You can only pay them to spread lies. That's why, if you donate to us, you get nothing in return except the truth. My very special guest joining me tonight, the somewhat legendary, I was talking to a Jewish friend of mine from New York, and he's like, oh my God, you're getting glad as my mom. He's fucking legendary, man. He's legendary. Yeah, and there was some mention of his left arm being cut off if he got to ask you a few questions and things like that, but it's Gilad Atzmon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show, mate.
It's a lot of pleasure. Nice to talk to you.
Can you give us a little bit of a background about yourself, who you are and what it is you do?
Yeah, I'm a jazz artist. I play pretty much all over the world. And I'm also a writer. I wrote a few novels. And in the last 15, 16 years, I decided to write non-fictional materials. I'm specializing on Jewish identity politics. I try to understand this unique phenomenon, and I'm probably one of the biggest experts on the topic, and not necessarily because I'm the cleverest around, but mainly because I'm probably courageous enough or stupid enough to deal with this very dangerous topic.
It's a fine line between courage and stupidity, and I think there's a fine line between naivete and intelligence as well sometimes.
Yeah, this is definitely the case. I still try to figure out whether I'm uniquely clever or extremely stupid. And I didn't come with a conclusive answer yet.
Well, what was it? Once a wise man figures out the truth that he's wrong, he'll either cease to be wrong or cease to be honest.
This is definitely the case. When it comes to be, I cannot think of anyway. Even my most bitterest critics do agree that I'm honest, but they argue that I should talk about those topic I indulge myself and others into. And as I mentioned many times, this helped me to define what Jewish power is. Jewish power is the ability to stop us discussing Jewish power. And it's definitely a power which they celebrate in our midst, Jewish oligarchy especially. And I argue that this is one of the main reasons that our universe, everything around us, is falling apart.
I thought about the universe this morning. If you say the universe wants things this way, or the universe wants things that way, or the universe is with me, or the universe is against me, it's a way of saying God without having to explain what a macroorganism is.
This is a very astute comment, what you have just said, because in the common use of the word universe, we admittedly refer to something that is very subjective. It is the way we interpret that thing in which we are in its very center. It is very, very interesting. I have to think about it a bit, but I can already see that I am challenged here by an intelligent person, which is not usually the case. Good for me. I'm lucky.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. When I was in high school, I found that I learned nothing from the people of my own age and my own intelligence. I always learned more from people who are older and a little bit wiser than me.
Being older than you is not necessarily an indication of wisdom. Usually, it is actually. I just finished 2 hours radio show. You are actually still very young. When you will get a bit older and you will have kids, do you have kids already? I don't know. Maybe you have kids.
Not yet.
Not that you are aware of. you will find out that. Actually, the most fundamental insights are pretty simple, on the verge of simplistic. And this is why we can actually learn much more from the youngsters, which is very, very interesting. You know, education... especially in the post 68 revolution, is in general different forms of indoctrination. This is the whole philosophy behind left thinking or contemporary left thinking. Rather than teach you how to think for yourself, they tell you what to say, what is right, what is correct, what is politically incorrect, what not to say. And the more education you're subject to in the contemporary universe, I use the word universe, the less you are able to think creatively, authentically, and for yourself.
Which is more or less getting stamped out day by day through a number of different means. We've seen this in particular. The American population are affected more than any other by entertainment, drugs, and bad food, right? And if you wanted to corrupt somebody's thinking processes, keep them entertained so that they don't have to use them, and if they start using them, keep them doped up on psychotropic drugs. So that they'll,
because this is very interesting, because in the real world you cannot think for yourself, but when you take the right drugs, you tend to believe that you are authentic to yourself and you own your thoughts, but in general you become more and more dysfunctional. So even if you manage to touch yourself, you get nowhere. And now I'm a jazz artist, and it is hardly a secret that the greatest moments within the context of jazz development were... when this music was dominated by narcotic materials. Jazz is now extremely clean. My band is clean. I'm clean for many years. And the music is actually becoming more and more clever, but less and less interesting.
More clever and less interesting. Does that mean there's more work going into it because you're not wasted all the time, but there's less creative thought flowing out because you're not wasted all the time?
I think that this is what it is. In England, I don't think that in America they use this word. I don't know about... You are in New Zealand, yeah?
Yeah.
Do you use the word muso?
Yeah, yeah.
Muso, yeah? And what it means for you?
Muso, a musician.
You say muso. All right, okay. So in England, in Britain, muso is how you slag off a musician who is very, very witty. He can play the saxophone, he can do some pyrotechnical stuff, but there is very little emotional, really exciting stuff involved with it. Mm. So we are becoming more and more muso and less exciting. And generally speaking, our political discourse is not very different. Yeah, so we see a lot of people that speaking, you know, they go through camera, you know, that the camera appeals to them and they... speak eloquently, but they actually say very little. And I believe that we are living in a very interesting time, because despite the desperate attempt to suppress the truth, which is an ongoing project to suppress our humanity, the truth has this unique, relentless tendency to manifest itself. And this is exactly what we see now in Britain with the Brexit, which is very, very interesting. For years, we learned that we should never talk about immigrants. I'm not an anti-immigrant. I'm an immigrant myself. You can hear that I can hardly speak English. People here were told that they cannot talk about immigrants, and they cannot talk about they cannot think about nationalism and about being Brits, and they were suppressed. We under this heavyweight cultural Marxist indoctrination, and then as soon as they had this new political tool, the Brexit, that allow people here to say, all right, I'm British, actually. I want to be British. I don't want to go to the park and to see all those people from all over the world. I'm tired of immigration. And there are a lot of people now supporting it. We saw exactly the same thing in Scotland. The Scotland said they had the political outlet to express their inclination towards authenticity, towards nationalism, towards patriotism, they dumped the left, they let it die. You know, the Labour Party was annihilated in Scotland, which is a fascinating development, and I'm very cheered by it.
It does seem that the reason why so many people are currently suppressed is that the easy option to just go and tick a box and make yourself free doesn't exist.
This is a very interesting insight. I'm definitely not a follower of Theodore Adorno. Actually, I despise the Frankfurt School and his project, but he came with one interesting insight. Even Noam Chomsky came, I think, in his entire life with probably one or two clever ideas. It can happen. Adorno realized that one of the symptoms of Western society is that we cannot understand what are the boundaries of our freedom, because we are supposed to be free. He said, well, if you lived at the time in USSR and you knew that you cannot talk about that and that and that and that and that and that, about Stalin or Gorbachev or whatever, or to explore your whims or wishes to drink Coca-Cola or to buy an album of Whitney Houston, you knew exactly what were the boundaries of freedom, and you can then celebrate your freedom. What is very interesting is that whether we realized it or not, we have become a subject to a very suppressive, castrating system, oppressive system, namely political correctness. Now, what is political correctness? Political correctness is politics that doesn't allow political opposition. Now, politics that doesn't allow political opposition is actually the definition of dictatorship. We are living here in the West. We see ourselves as free people, but the system that dominate our life is actually tyranny of correctness. And the tyranny of correctness is led by the so-called righteous. I do believe that liberation, for us, emancipation, is the removal of all forms of correctness from our speech, from our ability to think, our ability to think correctly. You know, we have to move forward, and this would mean leaving the progressives behind. To move forward is to drift away from the progressives.
Yeah, I think some people devote themselves to a particular type of belief, you know, and it's it's either a religious belief or a political belief, generally speaking. And it allows them to say, okay, I've now figured out the truth. All of it. And I'm I know all the truth now because I've become a libertarian. I know all the truth now because I've converted to Islam. I know all the truth now. And this is what is causing the misunderstanding of what's correct. Because when you're trying to only discover the one truth, it means you're not looking for other answers that also answer the same questions. I think there are many, many different ways to the top of the mountain. And when people are willing to make their mark, they're willing to draw it in the sand and say, this is the way it is supposed to be. This is absolutely 100% correct. And I will not question it. That's when we start to get into trouble. That's when we start to have, you know, extremism, the racism, you know, these genuine things which just get hyped up by the media used to throw everybody against each other.
I tend to agree with you. And the way I look at it, I differentiate between those who provide answers, which is, by the way, a left symptom. Leftists always will tell you, activists, you know, will tell you, we have to do that, we have to do that, we have to boycott Israel, we have to come on Monday, there is a picket, or so on and so on. There are people who always know the answers, and there are less, not many of them really, people who see their task as refining the questions. I think that my job, and I'm quite good at it, is refining the questions. I'm really more and more interested in questions. I'm not interested in answers. Once you understand the question, you can come yourself with three or four different answers. Yeah. For instance, the question is not what the truth is, pointing at the truth. The real question is how we discuss the questions relating to the truth.
How would you know if the truth was the truth if you found it?
How you know that the truth is the truth, you know? And by the way, once you understand the questions, you can deal with different answers. For instance, some people, you know, if you are a scientific person with empirical orientation, you would say, if you want to talk about the truth, you have to define now a correspondence rule, you know, that the truth has to relate that something that can be verified. But other people will tell them no, but some truths are truths emotionally related.
One subjective.
A priori related, and we are not so sure that we can verify it empirically, you know.
That's the difference between subjective truth, this is my truth, and objective truth, this is the truth. It doesn't matter who's looking at this box, we can all see a box.
Yeah, exactly, and when it comes to that point, you transcend yourself way beyond the banal discussion that is related to religion versus atheism, or moronic debates between competing answers. I'm actually more interested in competing questions.
Wait, hold on a second. The main debate that's going on in society is between the insane and the stupid. That's why nobody can find any answers. Because the only people that are actually seeming to be joining in the debate and actually letting their voices be heard 1,000 times a day through all the airwaves are either really stupid or freaking crazy. And it's confusing all the sane, intelligent people as to thinking, am I alone? Am I like one of the few? Like, are we dying out here? Are like stupid, crazy people going to like bust down my door and invade me with guns and things of this nature because some crazy person told them to put a stupid gun in their hand and march their stupid asses down into my grave? Is that going to happen soon? And a lot of people are thinking it is. And what the problem is with that idea, though, is it's acting out of fear. It's about thinking that these people are stupid, these people are crazy, as if they're not just people that are just like you. And
but what you're describing here is the a typical exchange between the rational and the irrational. Now, again, we are foolish enough to think that these are necessarily two opposing poles, rationality and irrationality. When it comes to the human subject, it is very clear to us that our excitement by a piece of architecture, music, love, these things cannot necessarily be described in rational terms. So we have to accept that we are at least as much irrational as we are rational. And we have those components struggling within each of us. In fact, those who cannot think irrationally are probably psychopaths. I believe that once we understand the power of irrationality, we become much more capable of understanding the political and political subconsciousness that we see around us. So, for instance, the debate about staying in the EU or leaving the EU here in Britain seems to be a rational debate. But actually, the impetus of people to leave the EU is not necessarily rational. It's a form of belonging. The desire to be who you are, to be surrounded by people like yourself. And those issues are more emotional and can much easier can be described in a much more powerful manner in poetic terms. And one of the reasons that we cannot really deal with irrationality is because we are living within a moronic technological pseudo-scientific realm. We think that everything can be precised can be described precisely in scientific, chemical, biological, technological terms. And this is a very wrong perception of the human subject and the human experience.
The right perception is having a healthy sense of irony, I think, and contradiction. I had a saying a couple of years ago, and so far I've been proven to be correct. History makes hypocrites of us all. What we once thought, once upon a time, is different today. And we're hypocrites, retrospectively, aren't we? And it just means that everything's in a circle, right? Where you figure out the truth right here, it comes full circle again, where you figure out another truth to replace it, or the thing that you threw aside, an old idea that became forgotten about, comes back, and people think that it's revolutionary.
But this is what you're saying here is very, very interesting, because you see, the human condition didn't change much in the last 15,000 years. Biologically, this can be proven. All right, we developed technologically, but we are still struggling with temporality. You know, we are born against our will, and we are thrown into this reality, and we have to survive, and eventually we turn into nothing.
We're domesticated, high-tech cavemen.
And then we will try to fill this time we stay on this planet with meaning, which is quite a crazy idea. Why do we talk about truth and 9/11 or Palestine? What is this nonsense? Let's just have fun, eat good food. But survival is not very easy. You know, food is not put on our table. We have to struggle for it. So there is this existential Sisyphean element. And when you start to look at your existence from that metaphysical perspectives, you realize that the thing that you are struggling with are not different from the ancient Persians or the Greek or the people that will live on this planet in 2,000 years, assuming that there is that the planet that doesn't annihilate itself.
And I can back that up, because there was a quote from Plato a couple of thousand years ago, which is still being used today. He says, "I'm a wise man, and the reason why I know that I'm a wise man is because I know that I know nothing."
Yeah. I tend to agree with it, and
But let's talk about Jewish identity for a second here. I mean, switching gears a bit. When did you start thinking about that as a concept and want to start writing books about it and actually start discussing it? What did you have, like a trigger, or was it a long, slow build up of things?
I think that when I lived in Israel, I'd never thought about those topics, and one of the reasons is because as a product of the Zionist project, I wasn't educated as a Zionist, because I'm kind of a post-Zionist product. You know, when I was born, Israel was already established for 15 years. Yeah, exactly 15 years. I never had to engage myself in Zionist issues. I'm a product of an Israeli patriotic upbringing, and since the Jews were the majority of the people on the land, the Palestinians were brutally expelled and so on, and I wasn't at all bothered by Jewish issues. When I came to Britain, I also didn't really engage myself with a question to do with Jewishness, because I didn't feel any need to sustain my Jewishness, because I wasn't a Jew to start with. I was an Israeli. But then in 2000, 2001, 2002... At the time of the Second Intifada, I was pretty devastated when I looked, at the TV, at the Guardian, BBC, CNN at the time. I was pretty devastated to see the people whom I believed then still to be my people treating the Palestinian that badly. And I try to understand what was it, how did the interpretation of the Bible as the core of our historical claim for the land started to fill us with all that brutality. I started to dig into Zionist history, the role of Jewish understanding within the notion of the Jewish state. I realized for the first time while being in Britain that if Israel is the Jewish state, the first question that we have to ask ourselves is, who are the Jews? What is Judaism? What is Jewishness? How those terms are related to each other? How they are related to Jewish politics abroad, and so on and so on. I realized that the main question to do with Israel are J related. They are related to the J word. Shockingly enough, the first people who picked on me and tried to silence me and later to destroy my musical career and so on, were, funny enough, the Jewish Marxists. The people who were supposed to be in my side. The people who were supposed to be atheists and cosmopolitan. But they were very clear. They told me, never, 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 never mention the J word. Don't go beyond the Z word, Zionism. I said, why? How can I talk about Zionism? I was an Israeli. I never been a Zionist. My parents were born in Palestine. They never been Zionists. They were the product of the Zionist project. Zionism is really foreign to us. It is Judaism, Jewishness, and the Jewish people. This is the project. And when this happened, I decided that I will dig into the J concept and understand it. And I'm working on it now for 10 or 15 years. Certainly, my book, The Wandering Who, is the best-selling book on Jewish identity politics. It is a very interesting project because we are dealing with a very, very sophisticated identity, with an identity that evolved for 2,000 to 3,000 years. Jewish survival strategies are varied and very, very sophisticated. Also, you know, some people think that Jews are uniquely clever. I actually argue that this is not the case, but they definitely, and I can explain how they did it or what led to such a situation. A Jewish oligarchy, Jewish elite, is uniquely sophisticated, especially in scholarship and money. Something to do with a social experiment that took place, or social exercise that took place in the Jewish ghetto for 1500 years. And all those issues are fascinating, and we must look into them because, as we know, Jewish elite dominates Western politics, American foreign affairs, Western media, Western banking, and whether we like it or not, the world we are living in is not in a good way. And this is the first place to, you know, to understand Jewish politics, Jewish identity politics, is where we must dig. And it's quite depressing that around the world, I believe, there are no more than 5 or 6 academics who are dealing with these issues. And all of them are basically subject to huge smear campaigns. They obviously don't have access to media. You can talk about E. Michael Jones or Kevin McDonald, myself. You know, this is actually my third interview today, but everything I do is within alternative media, and it is for a reason, because Jewish power is the power to silence discussion on Jewish power.
It's all powerful, really. If you think about this, what you call the Jewish lobby, it's perfect, because instantly anybody who uses the word Jewish or Jew, anti-Semite, instantly, right? Doesn't matter if there are people who are Jewish or are Jews that are involved in any kind of scumbaggery. It doesn't matter that you're singling out Zionists, because they can carte blanche blanket everybody who questions them in any way with the label racist, anti-Semite, and then quote the Holocaust. Shh. And then, boom, you silence the debate. Now, because, what was it? I think it was Voltaire said, if you want to find out who's in control of your society, figure out who you're not allowed to question. What is the only group of people that you're not allowed to criticize or even discuss on mainstream news?
You're absolutely right, and the fact that you are talking about it and understanding it, and not necessarily thanks to Gilad Atzmon, you're just living in the world and you see what is happening, is a very positive development. And I can see that I contributed to this change, and I don't have any doubt that sooner or later there will be this huge empowerment will backfire. Learning Jewish history reveals that it always leads towards a disaster. And, you know, Jewish history is basically a chain of Holocaust with a few tea breaks. And because of a reason, there is a reason. And we have to understand what are the reasons, is the responsibility of the Jews. Because if we don't point out where the problem is, we don't just betray ourselves, we also betray the Jews amongst us. They have this tendency that is embedded in their culture to bring disasters on themselves. The problem is that when they bring disaster on themselves, some other people are chosen to inflict this disaster. So we know how the German people are driven by guilt. And I'm not getting now into the very crucial question whether they should be or not. I obviously think that they should move on. But it looks as if the Arabs and the Palestinians are the next goyim du jour, the next people who are going to inflict a disaster on the Jews. As we can see, the situation in the Middle East, when this thing happened, a lot of people are dying around. We can already see what is happening in Syria and in Iraq. I think that not pointing at the lobbies that led us into this situation in Iraq, in Afghanistan, in Syria, in Libya, not to mention that Bernard Henri Lévy said in front of the French people on French TV, I liberated Libya as a Jew. Not to point at the neoconservative as a Zionist Jewish school of thought is a crime not just against the Iraqi people or the Libyan, it's a crime against the West and against the Jews.
Now let's
call a spade is an ethical, necessary move towards peace.
What was it, in Alcoholics Anonymous, the first step to solving your problem is admitting that you got one.
Yes, I just gave 2 hours talking about that, because this is exactly how I teach music. I tell my music students, all you have to do is to identify your problems, which is very, very difficult. For most people, including myself, it is very, very difficult to admit that we have a problem. And why? Because once we have a problem, the first thing that we will develop is a form of denial. So most people are living in denial. But if you want to get better, we must
get angry. And then
we must
start bargaining.
Yeah.
And then start getting depressed, and then accept that you've got the problem.
this is one way around it, definitely. You know, and it is an agonizing process. And I do believe that this is exactly the role of the real historian. The real historian is the person who understands the past as we move along. So the past is changing all the time, because as we move along, we see our past differently. If we see our past differently, we see the future differently. Once we understand that, we understand that the notions of past, present, and future are very elastic. We understand the real meaning of temporality. And this is something that I realized that doesn't exist in Jewish culture. In Jewish heritage, there is no such a thing as history. Jews didn't write a single history book between Josephus Flavius, that it's Roman time, to Graz, that is like late 18th century. Why they didn't write history? Because in order to understand what to do, how to act, they look at the Bible and at the Old Testament, and at the Talmud. This lack of ability to deal with temporality created a very unique culture. And this is exactly the culture that led to Zionism. If we listen to Shlomo Zand, Jews really invented themselves. They invented themselves because they were not committed to any historical thinking. And if tomorrow there will be a problem in Palestine, they can invent themselves in New Zealand and take your land and decide that it's the promised land.
I'd like to see that, actually. It'd be quite funny. New Zealand getting invaded by the Israeli military just because it's the promised land. It's like, you can't do that. We've got white people here that you can't have a whole lot of supremacist, racist, Zionist support against. All right? You're not going to have billions of dollars for your war machine to invade a country full of white people unless they're Eastern European or Slavic, you know? Something like that. Or they're Russian. You see, It's the thing. If you've got people who are too similar to your culture, it's far too difficult to see them as an actual enemy that you'd want to kill, right? Canadians and Americans dislike each other a lot. You know, they've got this kind of rivalry going on. A very similar rivalry exists between New Zealanders and Australians, but we don't kill each other like the rivalry between the Jews and the Palestinians in Israel right there. You see what I'm saying? Right.
I have something. I wish you were right here. If you look at the Bolshevists, yeah, in the early 20s, 30s, 20th century, you look at the Holodomor, you see what they did to the Ukrainian people. Bolshevism was largely a Jewish movement. At the time, Yuri Sleskin, probably the best historian of Jews that, of that era, wrote in his book that won many Jewish awards, the Jews were Stalin executioners. We look at the Holodomor, it's definitely the biggest crime of the 20th century. Some historians said that as many as 10 million Ukrainians were starved to death by these Bolsheviks in the process of collectivization.
Directly after they confiscated all of their guns.
If you look at the color of your skin, Ukrainians look very much like Jews, and it didn't stop the Jews wiping them out. The same happened in America. If you look at American Jews, they look very much like American people, I guess. And still the bankers that run Wall Street, all these wolves, and George Soros, they engage in different speculations that actually wipe, many classes in America, turn them into underclass, and demolish their hope of or prospect of any future. So this is something that we have to understand when it comes to racism and ethnicity. Although Jews are not a race, and there is no Jewish racial continuum, Jewish culture is extremely racist. You don't have to be a race in order to be racist. And this formation of racist ideology creates the condition for their oligarchy that allows it to engage in some horrible, disastrous exercises.
You just described democide, which is the leading cause of death in the 20th century. What's democide, ladies and gentlemen? It's when you elect a government that exterminates you. And it's the leading cause of death in the 20th century. Your own government's killed more people than any other factor.
Yeah. I think that they're one of the most interesting thing that happened in the 20th century, in the 21st century, or let's say the last quarter of the 20th century and the 21st century, and I speak quite a lot about it, is due to the transformation of productive capitalist society into a service capitalism, and due to the involvement of robotics and computer science, there is hardly any need of manual workers, and there is a growing need of people who are cognitive able. Able in that they are slightly more sophisticated. This situation creates a very small elite of very intelligent people and a growing population that is classified as underclass. So people usually talking about middle class disappearing. It's not that middle class disappearing, it's the underclass becoming bigger and bigger, bigger and bigger. And what we see now in America, in Britain, a lot of people within oligarchy insist that actually there is no room anymore for the democratic game.
Now, unfortunately, that is all we have time for today, ladies and gentlemen. Gilad, thank you very much for spending an hour with me. And do you have a website there where people can go get your books and stuff like that?
Yeah, it's gilad.co.uk, G-I-L-A-D.co.uk.
All right, awesome. Check it out, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be right back after the break on American Freedom Radio.
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
What kind of person are you? How do you see yourself? Are you the kind of person that lets everyone else do all the work, just hoping that you'll be able to get some of the crumbs that fall from the table? Or are you the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and does the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do? Are you hoping that all the activists giving their blood, sweat, and tears to serve humanity are going to solve all the world's problems? Or are you just wondering, is there something simple I can do to contribute? Yes. Yes, there is. Help us. Help us do what we do. Partner up with American Freedom Radio today by gifting a regular amount to support the network and your favorite hosts, bringing you less commercials and more information. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today from between $1 and $100 per month, according to the kind of person you are. Thank you very much for your support.
The last hour of American Freedom Radio you have been listening to is proudly sponsored in part by BigReggaeMix.com, the global healing station.
Produced by Mitch Santel and executive produced by none other than Errol Brown, winner of 5 Grammy Awards and the last producer and engineer of Bob Marley. Visit us now at BigReggaeMix.com for the latest show schedule, updates, and blog postings. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, too. BigReggaeMix.com.
On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean anything. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around. I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, am in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules. No rules. No taboo topics.
No taboo topics.
No fear of doom.
No fear of doom.
We are.
We are.
American Freedom Radio.
American Freedom Radio.